Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode here at the Damage Report. Today, of course, is Thursday, and you have launched into this episode having no clue who's going to be joining me as co-host. Well, we've got a surprise for you. The galaxy brain himself, Ben Carollo, joins us. Ben, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you here. So, you know, a lot of people are watching the show on Twitch, almost certainly familiar with your program, which has been a part of TYT now for a little bit. But for those who might not be familiar with your work, tell us a little bit about your show. What are some of the things that you like to cover? What do you consider sort of like your news beat?
Yeah, most definitely. And so on Galaxy Brain, I really like to lean into the title and pick a few topics and really dive into them deep, like with the housing crisis. We talked about like different policies that people could push for and the difference between those, and like how to talk to city council members along those lines. And then specifically, like, how does the relationship between a landlord and a tenant, like, you know, affect things, and how is that different under a housing cooperative? You know, so we really just deep dive into like the general theory surrounding an issue and get a little bit meta in talking about things from a more conceptual level so that people have a framework to understand news when they take it in.
Awesome. And we were talking before the show, and I learned that you said you had a master's in biosecurity and bioethics, was it?
Yeah, biosecurity and biodefense. Yeah.
Biodefense. Oh, it'd be even more appropriate for the time. So that is both awesome considering the time we're in, but also do you find yourself worried that that entire field might not exist anymore, since it's now considered sort of partisan to think we should have any security or put up any defense against these things?
Yeah, so basically we have more of the same right now, but more of the same, but like the volume has been turned up to like 1,000, right? Mm-hmm. Where I remember like in the first couple of years of grad school, like watching lectures and conferences and all these things where they're talking about, hey, we need to be ready for a coronavirus pandemic. We need to invest in global public health, right?
They said specifically experts, a coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, like, our eyes have been on coronaviruses for decades, right? Like things like the Eco Health Alliance, where like for example, the Wuhan laboratory that everybody likes freaking out about, there were American scientists working in that lab, right? And it's because we had like decades long partnership with you know, scientists and doctors in Vietnam and Laos and China, all over Southeast Asia. There's a few in the Middle East and a few in Central Africa as well, where it's this big global partnership. And we've been looking for new coronaviruses for a long time, because ever since SARS-1 happened, it's just been on our radar. It's one of the reasons why the vaccine rolled out so quickly, is because they'd already been trying to develop a general purpose vaccine for a decade. And so, but we're seeing more of the same, where like a couple of years ago, I was watching panels where they're talking about, we keep going to Washington saying we need global public health, not just public health in the United States, saying we need to fund local public health departments so that we can do contact tracing if we need to, all of these things. And they're not doing it, right? And they're talking about, even Obama really didn't fund public health the way it needed to be funded, the funding had stagnated. And now it's just turned up to like 1,000 times that, where it's just, oh no, it's all this George Soros conspiracy theory to microchip everybody and give us all 5G. And public health is terrifyingly depressing of a field now.
I can imagine. Was your master's program paid for by Soros, or was it Bill Gates that funded you going into that? Anyway, live in a ridiculous time, but we are going to be talking about the pandemic today, so you'll be able to bring hopefully a little bit of your expertise to that. But anyway, the show is Galaxy Brain, and so everyone should definitely stay tuned for that. But Ben, we're very excited to have you on the program, so thank you for joining us. For all of you watching, thank you for being here, regardless of what platform you're on. If you wouldn't mind hitting the like button if that exists on this platform, or sharing the stream otherwise, we would love for you to do that, to give unto the algorithmic gods that which they desire. And through the next 90 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about heat waves and fires. We're going to be talking about the pandemic, a tale of three different states, actually. Why is it so much worse in two out of the three than the other? We're going to see if we can learn any lessons. We're also going to be talking about cybersecurity and when a conference devoted to it falls apart. So that'll be fun. Rand Paul has been caught hiding what I believe is clearly corrupt stock activity. That's considered controversial, I guess. And one of the stories I'm most excited for today These right-wing textbooks, what they are saying about topics as broad as evolution, slavery, the Civil War. We're gonna really get into it and figure out what people are being taught in thousands of schools around the country. But that said, Ben, are you ready to launch into some news?
Oh, most definitely.
Okay, let's do this. The Pacific Northwest is now on the brink of another multi-day heat wave. As you're watching this, if you're in that area, you might be experiencing it too. In the worst case scenario that's been projected, temperatures could reach as high as 111 degrees Fahrenheit in some parts of Western Oregon by Friday before a weekend cool down. It might not get that bad, but it is still going to be very rough. So bad that these would actually be record-breaking numbers for the region if those records hadn't already been shattered a short time ago during the heat dome of not that many weeks before. And when you look at those numbers, when you see 111 degrees Fahrenheit, you might think, well, you know, I live in Arizona. There's been some heat. I live in California. It gets hot here too. But it's not necessarily the same thing. Tyler Kranz is a meteorologist who responded to these arguments saying, we'll often hear people say, who cares if it's 106 or 108? It gets this hot in Arizona all the time. Well, people in Arizona have air conditioning. And here in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of people don't. You can't really compare us to the desert Southwest. Now, because there's so little ability on the individual level in people's homes to deal with heat of this magnitude, the governor, Kate Brown, has declared a state of emergency over the heat, activated an emergency operations center, citing the potential for disruptions to the power grid and transportation. City and county governments are opening cooling centers and misting stations in public buildings, extending public library hours and waiving bus fare for those headed to cooling centers. So we're gonna go a little bit broad on this in just a little bit, but I wanted to give you a chance to get in, Ben. We don't know if the heat wave is gonna be as bad as the last one. It's looking like it might not be, but what are your thoughts about the current state of things?
Yeah, this is one of those areas of climate change that I think when people think climate change, they think like deadly hurricanes, they think extreme like flooding and stuff like that. But the two most deadly things from climate change are air pollution and heat waves, where what they do is they take people who are already at risk, right? People with disabilities, people who are elderly, and children who are sensitive to things like heat and air quality, and puts them in a position where a lot of them end up dying because of extreme heat, because of poor air quality and things like that. And you get these mass populations of people who are suffering extreme health effects. And especially in the middle of a homelessness crisis here in the United States, it puts us in an even more difficult situation. And during a pandemic, I mean, how many hospital beds are open for people who, you know, are suffering from like a heat stroke or something? We're really just put at the brink right now. And ultimately, we don't have the systems of support in place that we really need. And there's not, to make matters worse, I bet air conditioners have probably gone up in price over the past 3 months in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, we report on like these crises when they hit, but as with so many other topics, I have this sinking feeling that next year's not gonna be better. It's been going around like memes like, you know, it's the hottest summer ever, enjoy it. It's the coolest summer for the rest of your life. Like that's the sort of thing that we're really looking forward to here. And because we're on the brink of this heat wave, I wanted to go back to the last one, which we talked about quite a few times here on the Damage Report. It turns out that it is likely that more people died here in the United States than was expected. When you do an analysis of excess deaths in two different states, in Washington and Oregon, you can take a look here, the spikes that hit during the heat wave. Now, some of the past big spikes were caused by things like COVID, sort of understandably. But something like 600 more people than expected died in those two states during the heat wave. That is three times higher than the official state counts of heat related deaths. So officially on the record, a couple hundred people died. It's a massive tragedy, but it could actually be much worse than that. Now we're hoping that this heat wave won't be as bad as that one, but this is really just the beginning. I mean, we're focusing on the Pacific Northwest because you don't expect the heat there, but as Ben is pointing out, this is everywhere. Arizona was massively hit by heat. In California, we had it too. It's really difficult to escape it. Any other thoughts, Ben?
Yeah, I think like the one thought, I'll take us a step further in terms of doomering, right? We're in the middle of a pandemic right now of coronavirus, but one of the things that changes when you have changing climate is changing patterns of things like mosquito populations, right? And they change where they are. And there's some pretty nasty bugs out there, like dengue fever, for example, that could very easily make their way to the United States and become endemic here. As these patterns change with weather, so too these patterns of mosquito populations change. And that could lead to new pandemics of things that have been floating around in the global south for a while. And they might just find their way here in the United States and put us even further past the brink that we're already at.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, if we are hit by things like that, we've already demonstrated as a society that we're not willing to do what's necessary to protect ourselves. So that's exciting. Can't wait for the murder hornets to return. Yeah. So look, I hope that the Pacific Northwest gets through this. It seems like the government is a little bit more prepared for it this time, but buckle up. Because just like the wildfires in California, this is not a one-time thing that we just have to sort of, you know, give a stiff upper lip and get through. It is now the new normal. But let's go a little bit broader. The week started off with the IPCC report, making clear that we're at code red conditions for climate change. And that was serious news for like 5 hours. And now nobody's talking about it anymore. I mean, it's only apocalyptic. It gets pushed out. I understand a lot of news every day. It's hard to stay focused on one thing. So what is some of the news that might have pushed the IPCC report off of the front pages? Well, it might be things like this. Italy may have hit Europe's hottest day on record ever as the anti-cyclone Lucifer, which sounds like it's from a fantasy novel, is sweeping in. So yes, Italy hit 119.8 degrees. Just Italy, that hot. Okay, but maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it was that Siberia's wildfires are bigger than all of the world's other blazes combined, which is pretty crazy because there's a lot of fires. California is riddled with fire right now. I think they said in British Columbia, they were fighting between 300 and 500 blazes simultaneously. Greece, an entire island basically swept by flame. You might have seen the videos going viral of people fleeing to the water as the flames came in through a port in Europe. Maybe it's the news of records being broken, like for the first time in recorded history, smoke from wildfires reached the North Pole. We did it, everybody. We finally did it. And of course, you know, that's not even to get into the fact that you've got deadly widespread wildfires in places as disparate as Turkey and Algeria, by the way. There's concerns about fires breaking out in Spain and Portugal. In Tunisia, a temperature record has broken as well. So, you know, we talk about the Mediterranean, like that's sort of a climate. We think of the Mediterranean climate. Well, on both sides of it, it might be changing irreparably. Ben, what do you think about this? The world is on fire.
I mean, oh my goodness. It's mind blowing that we haven't done more, right? It's mind blowing, like for example, California is still depending on literal prison labor to put out fires, right? Why? Why? Literally a town called Paradise literally burned down, and that wasn't a metaphor enough for people to get through their heads that maybe we should be scaling up our emergency preparedness. Maybe we should not pretend like these things aren't going to keep happening, right? It's literally just like the pandemic that's happening now. We didn't do any preparedness in advance, and now look where we are. And now we're seeing these disasters come every couple weeks instead of every couple years. And they're still not putting in place what needs to be done in terms of like disaster preparedness and disaster response. And I'm terrified to see what the next 20 years look like when you see potentially significant areas within like Florida and Louisiana being permanently underwater.
Yeah.
It's just like, because we need to be building like housing for that now, right? The flood insurance program should have a relocation program to move people away from the coast. But we don't have programs like that, right? We're not doing enough to stop these forest fires. And we're not doing enough to like even just respond to like air quality, right? Like the government should have an information program to tell people to get like air filters for their homes.
You know, Ben, you raise a great point. If only we were in a time, a once in a half century period where we are actually talking about infrastructure here in the United States, where we could put a bunch of funding into it. That would be great. I wish that we had that, but unfortunately, no. Yeah, you're totally right. We should be doing something, but we unfortunately, like, it's very much like the pandemic, like the comparison you made. One would think, okay, people are being resistant to the lockdowns and the masks, but surely once it gets bad enough, they'll wake up. But have they? I don't know. I saw Matt Walsh tweeted something that honestly echoes what some, like Sean Hannity, was saying like a year ago. He's like, you know what? Yeah, you're gonna die someday. Just give up, lay down. He didn't say that last part. Just give up, lay down, let it into your lungs. I just saw before we went live, Marjorie Greene had a video. She was like, sure, the hospitals are packed with COVID, but they're packed with other things. We all die. So it's not like there was some hurdle that we had to pass and now we're ready to take it seriously. They went from deny, deny, deny to lay down and die. And I'm very worried that if we ever get past the denial and the just ignoring it, which we're seeing in climate change, that we'll be ready to just lie down. Just lay down on the beach and let the rising ocean wash your body away. I worry, Ben, that that will be the response of a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, literally, look at what happened during Hurricane Katrina, where they literally put police on the bridge to stop people from fleeing the poor neighborhood that was flooded to go to the rich neighborhood where there was higher ground. Yeah. It literally sums up to their policy is, how dare you poors demand anything more than the miserable life and the gruel that Jeff Bezos is willing to give you?
Yeah, it's harsh, but that's reality, unfortunately. I know everybody tunes into the damage report for positive news, but for the first time ever, we don't have it. This is the most depressing episode in our first season. Anyway, okay, we do have to take a break though, but we're gonna respond to a few of your comments. When we come back, we're gonna be talking about COVID. Why are some states doing so much better than other states? The answers will not shock you after this. Okay, everybody, before we jump back into the news, let me give you an idea of some of the things that are coming up on TYT. First of all, as always, immediately following the damage report, Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie will be going live both on Twitch and at youtube.com/IndisputableTYT with co-host today, Wasdi Lambre. Very exciting stuff. You're definitely gonna wanna watch that. I believe right after that, you've got Reactions with Rayvana at twitch.tv/TYT. So basically, just buckle up, hold on to your butts on Twitch, because you're not going nowhere. But anyway, then the main show will be going on. There's a lot of exciting stuff there. Also, TYT Sports, Ricky Strom goes live every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time at youtube.com/TYT Sports. He talks about, well, sports, that's true, but also politics and gaming and does a bunch of other stuff besides. So with that though, why don't we jump back into what's going on around the country? Obviously, throughout the United States, COVID is a major and growing problem, but it is not growing at the same rates everywhere, not even when you just focus on a few of the biggest states. So here we want to talk about California, Texas, and Florida, three states that have each at different periods had horrendous increases in COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. But so far, at least, that is not really the case. Not all three are being hit in the same way during this most recent Delta variant fueled surge. California is reporting 141.1 new coronavirus cases for every 100,000 residents over the past week, a rate half that of Texas at 297.8, and less than 1/4 of Florida, which is above 650 cases per 100,000. California's rate is also less than the national average, by the way, of 232, despite being a city with some very large packed, a state with some very large packed cities, travelers, tourism, and all of that. So let's focus on where it's going wrong. The flood of COVID-19 patients newly admitted to Florida hospitals is now far worse than at any point during its winter surge, the so-called dark winter. Well, we got a dark summer for you. In January, Florida was reporting more than 1,150 new COVID patients every day, but now it's over 2,071 hospital admissions. And when you take a look at these three states, when it comes to daily admissions to hospitals, there's a big gap between them, with California below 2 per 100,000, a little bit more than twice as many as Florida, but in Texas, Florida is at 5 times the rate. And Texas is doing much better in that metric. But overall, if you look at their cases, let's bring up the Texas cases. It is getting back up into where it was at in November leading into December, despite the fact that we've had a vaccine now for more than 6 months. So we're going to get into some of the potential explanations. But Ben, what do you make of how different the situation is in these 3 different sort of spots across the United States?
I am going to go out on a limb here. I know it's a very radical limb, but I'm going to go ahead and say that the prevalence of anti-mask, anti-vax Republicans is probably playing a significant role in what's going on in Florida and Texas. It's almost like, I know. Very, very wild take, out on a limb. It's almost like the vaccine reduces the rate of infection and the spread, and it's almost like the masks also reduce the rate of infection and spread. I mean, I might just have a master's degree in biosecurity and biodefense, but you know, that's my wild guess. Very uneducated, simple guess.
Well, look, if I've learned anything from following the media for the past 10 years, it's that the more someone knows, the less you should trust them. I don't trust those people with book learning or any other kind of learning. So let's look at the evidence and see if you might be right. Well, first of all, we're gonna look at a couple different explanations. One is vaccination rate. So my gut would say that California probably is more vaccinated than Texas or Florida. So let's look at the rates. California, the fully vaxxed rate is at 63%. 77.5% have received at least one shot. So Florida is less vaxxed, although perhaps not as big of a gap as you might think. 6 points less in fully vaccinated. It's looking like closer to 8 points in partially vaccinated. Texas, which is doing better than Florida in some metrics, is again less vaxxed than even Florida at 53.7%. Fully vaxxed, 64.3% partially vaxxed. So there are gaps, certainly. They're not massive gaps. And so that's when you get into the other measures, other than just vaccination. California has urged all residents, even those who are fully vaccinated, to wear masks indoors while in public, and is requiring them in K-12 schools. The governors of Texas and Florida, on the other hand, have largely banned schools and municipal governors from instituting such mandates, though some local leaders have defied those orders. So it turns out that your wild gamble of a guess, Ben, probably is true. Not only have they not done what California has done, which is mandating it, they are banning local governments from banning it. Isn't that crazy? Now, like, that seems to be maybe falling apart in Texas. There's some court stuff going on right now, and a couple different areas, both in Dallas and down in the Rio Grande Valley, are starting to fight back against that. But it almost seemed as if they were like taking the side of COVID once again, wanting to make sure that it gets its claws in as deep as it can.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so the most important thing that people understand when it comes to pandemics and vaccines and the mask wearing is that it is a probability game, right? It is literally a probability game, and there's whole fancy mathematical models that they do to like do this. They do a lot of agent-based modeling, if you know what that is, it's really fun. But basically, the most important number is, what are the chances that a person who is spreading coronavirus bumps into somebody who is susceptible to the coronavirus, right? Mm-hmm. And susceptibility has its own percent chance. And so vaccinations and masks are both numbers to reduce that. And even like a 10% difference in vaccination rates can lead to wildly different rates in the amount of spread, because there's a lot of non-linear scaling in terms of vaccines, mask wearing, and the actual spread of coronavirus.
You're starting to sound like Dr. Fauci, and it's making me very angry, actually. But no, that's why we're glad we have you with your expertise, and you're obviously totally right. And we're seeing that play out in cases and hospitalizations and deaths, which, like, every time I post about COVID, I get at least one or two lizard brains who will respond with, "Yeah, what about the deaths?" And I'll point out that they've like doubled in the past 2 weeks, and it's absolutely dreadful to be losing 500 or 600 people per day. But then I also know, like, were these people taking COVID seriously when 3,000 people were dying per day? I doubt it. I don't think that they actually care. It's just a talking point. And so, look, there is still potentially time in Texas and Florida to start to take this more seriously. You know, not even to mention, you know, Missouri, Mississippi, places that are really hard hit. There is time. You change the behavior, you will change the outcome when it comes to the coronavirus. We are still relatively early on in this wave. some of the eventual deaths are probably baked in. Because you know, there's a gap, an average of, I believe, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, like close to 30 days between someone becoming infected and when generally they die of the coronavirus, if they're going to die. But I don't see huge behavior changes in these states. And when I say behavior changes, I don't mean, you know, reports in Florida of refrigerated trucks being ordered so they can store more bodies, or you know, really local level things. Like here, you can see in Mississippi, Nick Judden posted, they're setting up once again a concrete garage overflow center for storing patients, which we saw, you know, at the height of the pandemic last year. So I don't know. Ben, prediction time, I guess. Do you think that Florida and Texas are going to take it more seriously if the cases continue to go up the way that they are?
I don't think so. I mean, like honestly, like I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is basically what the Republican Party is going to do. They're just going to say, just deal with it, just get over it, just accept it. I mean, especially in terms of like our for-profit healthcare system. I mean, there were hospitals that literally shut down last year because it wasn't profitable to treat COVID patients. It wasn't profitable enough, right? They weren't doing enough like surgeries and whatnot. And so like that's our system, right? That's our system, shutting down hospitals in the middle of a pandemic because their magic line didn't go up. I don't think I might just be doomering out, but I don't think they're going to change what they're doing.
Yeah, I've become increasingly pessimistic throughout this pandemic. We will see. We will see. I'm going to play a video in a second though, which is not necessarily going to lead to a lot of hope or optimism in the audience, but it is, you need to understand what's going on. So we're going to go to that. Can we get that photo we just went to again, ready again? I want to incorporate that in this. One of the reasons that it is so devastating that COVID cases are rising so rapidly and the hospitalizations are rising so rapidly is that our, you know, public health system, the actual people who make up it, have had a devastating year and a half. Many of them at or past the breaking point. And so when you see things like, if we can put up the photo again, the fact that nurses and doctors are going to be treating COVID patients in garages again, you know, it's not that surprising to find out that some of them are just ready to be done with this whole thing. And so I want to show you a bit of an interview I saw with a nurse in Mississippi about their experience. So let's go to that.
Wearing our masks and doing what we need to do. We're tired. Nurses are so tired. It's getting to the point where we need help. We've been helping as much as we can, and we need help from, you know, our community. I respect everybody's choice to get vaccinated or not, but when it comes down to it, it's going to just continue to get worse, and it's going to get to the point where it affects our kids. You know, we are. That's my biggest fear. People aren't doing what they need to do to protect us. And you know, we're human. We're not robots. We're not machines. We can't continue to do this forever at this capacity.
You're a nurse on the ICU floor right now, but you're not going to be.
No, I can't. I can't do this anymore. I've seen more death than I ever thought that I would see in my entire life. It's heartbreaking in every way. I don't even know how to describe it. It's overwhelming.
So that is a nurse who has been dealing with this every day, who went to the field knowing that she was going to see a lot of death, a lot of suffering. I mean, she works in an ICU, it's sort of expected. And she has been broken by this experience, at least in terms of the ability to continue doing it on a daily basis. And we can just, you know, sort of hope that she's an outlier, that now there will always be doctors, there will always be nurses. But we're finding out in a lot of places already that is not the case. Texas, I don't know if you saw this, Ben, Texas is having to import doctors from other states because they can't actually treat all of the patients that they have. Now that may be sustainable for a little bit, that we can just take doctors from one state, send them to Texas. But what about when those states need their doctors? Think about the dominoes as they fall when it comes to that. So what did you think about that video?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, like this is where it all comes to planning, right? This is where it all comes to planning. I mean, 6 months into this pandemic, we basically knew. And I mean, honestly, anybody who really knew what they were talking about, anybody that's like an epidemiologist that studied coronavirus even a little bit knew that basically after 6 months, it's pretty much guaranteed that coronavirus is gonna mutate to the point where we're always racing against coronavirus. And even if we rolled out a vaccine, it still wouldn't have done enough. Like, and we're dealing with it right now with vaccine resistant strains. It's going to become like cyclical, like the flu, not necessarily seasonal with like a regular cycle, but it's going to like mutate so that we're always struggling against it. What should have happened, the response should have been rapidly training up people to augment nurses and medical staff, right? Maybe that means like pulling people out of like active duty or the National Guard, training them how to do like intubation and like basic like treatment for COVID patients. Maybe it means like doing rapid training programs for people doing like associate's degrees or like, you know, entry level like nursing degrees and stuff like that. Like just ramming people through those programs so they can help augment people in hospitals. That is what should have been done. None of that has really been done. And we're just working people to death. We're working people to death, literally, as like even nurses and doctors are keeling over from coronavirus because yeah. they're dealing with coronavirus patients every day.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that would have been a great idea. That add that to the long list of things that we could have and should have done in that first year that we didn't, because we had not just not the best leadership, but we had a complete lack of leadership during the, you know, the greatest time of domestic crisis in our lives here. I don't know if something like what you just laid out is being done under Biden. I hope that it is, because this isn't going away anytime soon. Now that said, let's turn very briefly to one more topic. This is something that got touched on a little bit during the first 6 months or so of the pandemic, but there's more evidence now. And I want to make sure that it gets out there, because we're doing sort of like the fire hose method of trying to get people vaccinated. I will use literally every possible technique. So let's talk about this now. If you aren't worried about what COVID might do to your lungs, to your heart, the long-term effects of long COVID when it comes to your senses and those sorts of things, well, I will remind you that there is increasing evidence that it could do some devastating damage to your junk. A study published in May demonstrated the presence of the COVID-19 virus in the penis long after the initial infection in humans. More to the point, the penile tissue of the COVID patients examined in the study showed evidence of vascular damage. Perhaps not a surprise given the disease's well-documented effects on the vascular system elsewhere in the body. So it is, to some extent at least, chewing up the penis. Does that sound great? No, I don't think so. Well, vaccines are free, usually freely available here in the United States. Feel free to go get it. But let's give you some more information. Another paper published in March finds some very preliminary evidence that impotence is much more widespread among male COVID survivors than among men with no COVID history. Among the healthy controls, just 9% reported erectile problems, but the rate among COVID patients was roughly 3 times as high, with over a quarter saying they had trouble getting and or keeping erections. Now, we're gonna go to a visualization. If there was a different one, I'd use it, but this is what they had available. So here's a shot of your odds, guys. Which do you want? There's a lot of issues baked into that visualization. And I have read that this is the same person who used to do visualizations for things like the Washington Post. I don't know what has gone wrong since then. But this is a serious problem. Long COVID affects the body in many different ways, possibly ways that we don't yet understand, but some seem like issues. So if your position is, I'm not gonna get vaccinated, I'm not gonna wear a mask, I'm not gonna socially distance because I'm a man, I love my toxic masculinity. Well, you can love it as long as you can keep it. We'll see how it works out for you. Ben, thoughts?
You know, you'd like to think that this would really motivate people, but honestly, based on Ben Shapiro's response to recent Cardi B songs, I think that this might not be as big of a seller as you might think.
No. maybe if we could get Cardi to do a rap about this, then Ben Shapiro would feel like he has to respond to it, because they cannot help but talk about these female rap artists that they say that they don't like or whatever. Maybe that would spread some awareness about this. And look, these are small studies with small samples, as anything having to do with erectile dysfunction, you're probably not gonna get thousands and thousands of men to take part in this necessarily. But the at least preliminary evidence is there. Again, you seem to be right. It doesn't seem like this is convincing a lot of people, but I will put it out there. Even if just a few guys do the thing that we've been reading about where they set up like secret appointments and then they never tell people they're vaccinated, if we can get through to a few people, then that might help. Any final thoughts, Ben?
No, I mean, you know, hopefully people will get vaccinated, I guess.
I agree. Okay, we're gonna take our second break of the hour. When we come back, we're gonna be touching base with the Line 3 pipeline protests and then getting into some of the potential consequences that might be coming Rand Paul's way after this. Anyway, before we get back into our next story, an unfortunate reminder, I know, but starting on Monday, the multicast of the Young Turks, which had previously been playing at youtube.com/thedamagereport, will no longer be going on. So you will have to go to youtube.com/theyoungturks to watch the live stream of the show. Reminder, it is freely available. You do not have to be a member, subscriber in any way to the network or to the channel or anything like that. It's available to everyone, but it will not be multi-streaming on the Damage Report's YouTube channel. So just a reminder, starting Monday, you still got the rest of the week, and then things will change at least for now. Okay, so with that, how much time do we have? You know what? I think we might be able to get in these two stories. I'm feeling optimistic. Let's jump into it. I want to give you some updated information about the Line 3 pipeline protests that we've talked about in the past. Now, we had shown in the past that some of the security force retaliation against those attempting to stop the construction of this pipeline has been incredibly rough, including the weaponization of helicopters to try to pelt people protesting with you know, like gusts of sand and rocks and things like that. Well, it has continued to be rough. Not that long ago, back on the 30th of July, water protectors at Line 3 were subjected to pepper spray and rubber bullets during a series of arrests. And protesters who've been jailed have reported mistreatment from officers, such as lack of proper food, solitary confinement of people protesting a pipeline, and denial of medications. And this is not just a small number. More than 600 people have now been arrested or received citations of one form or another while participating in these protests. And all of it backed up by the company. So Enbridge is actually paying the salaries of the police officers who are brutalizing these protesters as part of a deal with the state. Take a look at this. The pipeline was approved in exchange for a promise that taxpayers would not have to foot the bill for policing the expected protests. Well, that's good. I mean, the state got so much out of that deal. But anyway, Ben, this has been going on for some time, and the tactics are as rough as we've come to expect with virtually any protests. You know, the Black Lives Matter protests, the people trying to run down the coal workers protesting on the East Coast right now. What are your thoughts about this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many layers to this. I mean, first and foremost, you can see the lovely city behind me, Minneapolis. There are police officers from Minneapolis that are going up there to participate in this. So literally from my own city, some of the people who are brutalizing protesters at George Floyd Square are the same people who are brutalizing these Line 3 protesters. And to make matters even worse, in order to build this pipeline, they're literally violating treaties and like plowing through indigenous land. And so there's a serious legal question, and I would argue to say that it is illegal for them to put the pipeline there without the consent of the tribal authorities in northern Minnesota. And that's what they're arguing in court. They're doing this so very much in my view illegally, where they're violating the treaty. They're going on land that's not theirs, paving through it and putting in place this this pipeline. And then when a lot of indigenous folks are trying to like defend their land from having a pipeline driven through it, they're brutalized by police officers who are literally being paid by this private company. And yeah, it's really, really frustrating, because I was just reading in a report, I didn't really go into detail, but Line 3 is already leaking before it's even finished. And that is a problem that they're contending with now. I know, very surprising.
No one could have seen it coming. No one. Yeah, it's absolutely absurd. So you got the violence. I was reading an article about some of the indigenous TikTokers who've been participating in the protest having their accounts taken down. TikTok implying that they've violated some sort of community standards. Many of the streamers saying, I have no idea what I supposedly did and they're not providing me any information. So it seems like this is an attempt to shut out the free flow of information not coming from Enbridge or from effectively the mercenaries, the hired mercenaries who are enforcing this area. I realize we've skipped two reactions. I want to give you some basic information in case this is the first that you're hearing about it. The Line 3 oil sands pipeline is a 1,097-mile crude oil pipeline extending from Edmonton in Alberta to Superior, Wisconsin. In the US, most of the pipeline's route is being built in Minnesota, where construction of Line 3 is replacing an existing 282-mile pipeline with a new 330-mile route. It crosses more than 200 water bodies and 75 miles of wetlands. Construction began in December of last year. Total project is 80% completed with estimates it will reach final completion toward the end of 2021. And they are desperately trying to stop it with these ongoing protests. Unfortunately, while look, I think you make a great case as to its illegality, they have the backing of the administration, the same Biden administration that got some positive press, including from us, about, you know, coming out against other pipelines. It's a shell game, basically. It's like, oh, wait, so people are really mad about, you know, Keystone XL or one of those. Well, we're not gonna do that anymore. But now we're gonna turn over to this one. They just have to get that the oil sands out there.
Yeah, and it's a climate change double whammy too, because those wetlands, right? Like those peat bogs are some of the most efficient natural carbon sinks on the planet, right? Peat bogs are very, very effective carbon sinks. There's tons and tons of carbon that's like stored in there. And if you destroy those parts of the environment, typically that carbon will find its way into the atmosphere one way or another. One of those ways being fires, which are notoriously difficult to put out. Especially when you have oil pipelines leaking nasty chemicals into those bogs. So it's a climate change double whammy, right? You have the oil that's coming through the pipeline, and then you have the resulting climate impacts on what is a very, very effective natural carbon sink. Not to mention the pollution of the water. I mean, my understanding is that it literally crosses the Mississippi River, and that's a big deal, right? A lot of people, I get my water from the Mississippi, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, look, I get that you're worried about that. I don't think that anywhere like in the US, a government would allow people's drinking water to be contaminated in a way that's not safe. So I think that you're probably fine in that area. But yeah, and so look, the fact that the Biden administration is backing this, in addition to, like, they put out a call in the last couple of days for OPEC to increase their production of gas. Oh, I wonder why people aren't convinced that they have our back when it comes to climate change and aren't just going into this reconciliation process assuming that it's gonna come out just great. Yeah, you like out of one corner of their mouth, they're saying that they take it seriously, they're gonna follow the science. Out of the other, let's burn everything that we can burn while there's still time. Those are mixed messages that unfortunately will result in the destruction of our civilization. Okay, we have a little bit of time, so we're gonna jump into this one last story to close out the hour. Rand Paul has become just the most recent US politician to be embroiled in a scandal about their stock activity when we found out just yesterday that his wife bought stock in Gilead Sciences, which makes the antiviral drug known as remdesivir, which makes, it's used to treat COVID-19. I'm sure that you've heard about it. She bought back on February 26, 2020, before the threat from the coronavirus was fully understood by the public and before it was classified as a pandemic by the World Health Organization. So, of course, there is supposed to be disclosure of these stock purchases within a relatively constrained time of about a month. So that was February of last year. So I think that we've broken that. Yes, it's more than a month. In fact, it's a year and a half. But he just made a mistake, man. He thought that he had sent it in. And, you know, probably the fact that he didn't report it probably had nothing to do with the fact that, Purdue and Loeffler last year were embroiled in this scandal about the purchasing of coronavirus sensitive stocks. And there was this big investigation that seems to have been very damaging to them. And after all, both ended up losing their reelection bids in Georgia. But yeah, he was potentially privy to sensitive information as a member of the Senate Health Committee. In January, they hosted Trump administration officials for a briefing on the coronavirus. I'm assuming that had no effect whatsoever. Anyway, we're gonna have a lot more details about what money might have been made, the actions that he took. But Ben, as I alluded to, this is just the most recent of any number of different instances where I think the public is right to worry that senators might be using the privileged information they have. What are your thoughts about this whole thing?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, especially like, I mean, so to me, it's especially telling because it's investing in a company that makes an antiviral. Because antivirals are A, notoriously difficult to make, and B, also usually like if you have something like influenza, right, they won't even give you an antiviral because the time that it would take for the antiviral to really be effective, usually you've already got past the infection. So if you're at the point where you need an antiviral, you're already at the point where you're like, oh snap, this is gonna be like a big thing. And it's probably gonna be an infection that lasts like a week or two and take a decent chunk of time to recover from. And so an antiviral really is like when you've got like very serious infections, usually as a general rule, it's not always true. But in this case, I feel like it's pretty telling because COVID is a pretty significant infection that leads to, you know, like a couple weeks of being sick and potentially dying. And so to say, oh my goodness, this is something we might need an antiviral for, is particularly significant in my humble opinion.
Yeah, well, to believe, you know what, this might be a big thing. We should get some of this stock in February. Overall, how would you characterize the way that Rand Paul has talked about COVID? Is he talking about it as a thing that's so serious that we might need some sort of emergency antiviral?
Well, no, of course not. And this is what they keep running this game where, you know, they're literally not putting their money where their mouth is, right? They're getting vaccinated, they're being quiet about it. They're, you know, they're sheltering away in their mansions and they're like, oh, I'm not gonna go visit, you know, those random people and get myself infected. And then they turn around and get on TV, and when they're on Fox News from their Zoom conference, they're saying, oh, you know, don't worry, it's no big deal. And it's just this ridiculous lie where they're trying to gaslight people and say, you know, no, there is no war in Ba Sing Se, right? There's no pandemic. Don't worry about it. You know, like it's nothing.
Yeah. And look, I don't personally believe that they should be able to own any individual stock at all. But at least if they were going to, having their corrupt privileged information lead to them purchasing stock in things that would pay off if we did well in the pandemic, theoretically bothers me less than investing in what we'll do well if we fail. Now, like if you random person watching this, if you purchase stuff like that, I get it. You don't have any control over the outcome, but he has been seemingly advocating for COVID for a year and a half. So if you also have a financial incentive for us to desperately need things when we fail, that really does bother me. But again, the overall issue is that they can buy individual stocks at all. And I know that some, you know, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they've tried to get this outlawed, but so far we're not there, Ben. I get why it's difficult to get people to stop themselves a path to making money, but I don't understand why so many people tolerate the personal ownership. Any final thoughts?
I mean, literally, imagine if he was like investing in funeral homes, right? Like how grim would that be? Where it's like, oh, we're definitely not gonna do anything about this because look, think about how much money we could make with our funeral home investment here, you know? Yeah. Like it's really that scale. And I think people really need to understand that that is the scale that it's at.
I agree. Okay, we have very little time left, I'm assuming. We have 30 seconds. Okay, so really fast, I saw a super chat from LaShawna Clark who says, OMG, John, have you forgotten about Flint, Michigan? No, I was being sarcastic. That is exactly what I was referencing. Yes, they will poison your water freely. There's fracking chemicals and lead and all that. No, I'm right there with you, LaShawna. Don't worry about that. Anyway, that is all we have, all the time that we have for our first hour. Thank you all of those watching on our linear platforms. But if you're watching on Twitch or on YouTube, we do have a bunch more stories. So we're gonna take a short break, couple of minutes. We'll come back, do some more after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.